Hello and welcome to On the Corner, the official podcast of PitcherList.com. I'm your host, Eric Samulski, joined on this final episode of our 5x5 breakdown of Nick's top 200 starting pitchers. We're going to get through to 100 today. Nick, how do you feel about all we've done?
I mean, this has been great. I kind of love this format. I hope you guys do too. Please, obviously, leave us some feedback on it on Blue Sky, where I am right now. We actually have, believe it or not, we have a Pitcherlist Media Blue Sky that is just our posts and everything. And then I have my own, Nick Pollock at pitcherlist.com at Blue Sky. That is my own musings. So you can actually have those two separate now, unlike how it is on Twitter. It's pretty cool.
And I have mine. So you can follow me, Eric Samulski, on Blue Sky. I'm still on Twitter as well. But yeah, follow us there. So just housekeeping at the beginning, then we'll dive right in. This is the final episode of our 5x5 breakdown. If you're just listening to this, Nick and I broke down all the top 100, or will have broken down all the top 100 pitchers in his rankings five at a time. So make sure you go and check out those older episodes. And then we are, after a short break, we are going to have longer episodes where we look at some of the guys outside of the top 100 that we are most interested to talk about, or we're most bullish on heading into next season. So there will be a longer episode for those guys outside of the top 100. We're going to start this episode with your 96th ranked starting pitcher. As you mentioned on the episode prior, this was a mini tier of guys who are starting the year injured. It started with Yuri Perez and Kyle Bradish and Christian Javier, who were in the episode prior to this. And this mini tier ends with the number 96th ranked starting pitcher, Shane Bieber, who was downright electric at the start of 2024. And that Guardians team could have probably used him in the postseason. We don't really know where he's going to pitch next year. I think there's an assumption he comes back to Cleveland, but we'll have to see. We're probably not going to see him before May or June would be my guess, but we don't have a firm timeline right now. Do you think assume that what we saw at the beginning of 2024 is a level that Bieber can carry over? Or because that was such an improvement from what we had seen before for him, is it foolish to just assume that carries over?
Yeah. The cutter was good. The cutter was cool. Slider was cool. I just am sad that we didn't get more Shane Bieber, because it really felt like he was kind of going back to what he used to be with how good the slider used to be. Four seamer was still at 91 and change, not like the 93 plus or whatever we used to see from Shane Bieber. And I do hope that him getting Tommy John does revitalize some of that velocity. Sometimes we do see that where you're just throwing the hurt arm and now you are fresh and ready to go. At the very least, this is just like the other podcast we're talking about where with Shane Bieber, hey, you're going to be healthy again and you should help when you do pitch. How much? I don't know. If you need that roster spot, you let him go. But Shane Bieber should help more so than the guys after this list when he does throw. So just have him on your team and we'll see how this works out.
Yeah, I'm happy to take shares again. Obviously, we will see where he winds up in free agency. But yeah, big in on Shane Bieber again. You're not as high on your number 97th ranked starter. For the record, if you missed it, there was an earlier episode, guys in the late 60s. There were some of the top pitching prospects in baseball. One of these guys, or this guy, is considered as a part of that group. But you are down a little more for fantasy purposes on your number 97th ranked starter, Andrew Painter of the Philadelphia Phillies.
Yeah. So what's actually really interesting about me doing this top 200 list is actually I begin the process of understanding prospects. And I feel that entering this year, I understood Skeens. I understood who Job was. I understood Jared Jones actually a little bit beforehand. I, you know, had a better sense of, oh yeah, Landon Knack. I remember that from when I wrote about him in the Dodgers breakdown. And I start to grasp what makes these guys tick. And what's so wonderful is that this year we have our live data now from AAA, which allows us not only to see locations of pitches and what they throw, but the actual pitch metrics of these things. We're talking about all the things I love from IVB and extension and VAA, velocity. We also have our PLV grades for all of them, as long as they pitch in AAA or in the AFL. So with Andrew Painter, I didn't get any data until the AFL. And this is, by the way, accessible to everybody with PL Pro. It's one of the million amazing things we have at PL Pro, and you just got to get it and have yourself a field day like the Disneyland of baseball metrics. And I'm really surprised at what I saw from Andrew Painter. Now, I talked to some really smart people at First Pitch Arizona, James Anderson, who was right about Gavin Stone, and I wasn't entering last year. And what I saw from Andrew Painter was, yes, 96, 97. However, extension, really bad, like at 6 feet of extension. His height-adjusted VAA, steep. His vert was under 15 inches. 15 feet. 15 inches, yeah, of IVB. And wait, that's not good. That's not actually a good fastball at 96. What Andrew Painter did so well before his Tommy John surgery was command. This is what James Anderson was saying. It was like, look, command is the main thing with Painter. It's why he swept up the minors, is that he's able to throw this fastball and have secondaries off of it. And like, they couldn't do anything at the velocity, whatever the pitch metrics were and all that kind of stuff doesn't matter. It's about the velocity and location and then the secondaries off of it. And that's okay. I can understand that. Now, you only had 3 starts at the time of me getting this data in the AFL. Could also be different moving forward. Could be improved, obviously improved command, but also the secondaries as well. And at the end of the day, I see Andrew Painter, who does not have this overpowering fastball and reliant on command, with a new slider, I believe that's a bullet one that looks very good. The changeup could not be spotted, and I believe it was a curveball that was also around and can be very good. But that to me isn't like, oh no, this guy is going to show up in camp and just own it and then start for the Phillies. I actually even saw a plan saying they're going to start him in June so that they can work out the innings as well. And you add up all of that, it says, okay, like kind of like the Ricky Tiedemann idea entering this season was, I don't want to hold on to Ricky Tiedemann for a month or so. I don't want to draft and like have this empty roster spot and not knowing if it was going to be good. We got more clarity on Tiedemann before the season started about an injury anyway, and so on and so forth. If I remember correctly, I could be wrong on that, but long story short, unless it's Skeens, it's not worth it. And Andrew Painter is not Skeens in my view. Yeah. So I have him down to 97, and
I'm glad
Schultz may have a higher idea of getting there out of camp. Same with Bubba Chandler. Same with Jackson Job. So that's why those guys are higher up.
I'm glad you brought that up because James and Chris Clegg are, and Eric Cross are 3 guys I really go to a lot on prospect stuff. And so hearing James's thoughts really kind of solidifies a little bit of my opinion on it. I had seen the data on Painter as well and was like, ooh, I wonder if this is consistent with what we've seen before. I think he's going to get a shot to crack the rotation in spring. We'll see. The Phillies could also sign somebody. It's definitely something to keep an eye on in the offseason. Your number 98th ranked starter is somebody we've been talking about for years, who continues to kind of get in his own way a little bit. First, it was some command issues that popped up, then it's been consistent injuries. His home ballpark will always be an issue. It's a left-hander, Nick Lodolo. We have to assume Lodolo is going to start in the Reds rotation next year. We know that Lodolo has the upside, to miss bats against both righties and lefties. We know that he can be a solid starting pitcher. We know that the home park isn't great. But at this point, we're now, I mean, how many years can we talk about the potential of a guy before maybe it's possible that we're not really just going to see it?
Right. So I do want to clarify that this is tier 12 after Shane Bieber at 96. We're now entering in 97 with Andrew Painter. These are the like late round dart throws that I'm going to be paying attention to early on. But if I'm going to plant my flag, I'm not going to say that these are the ones I want to hold on to early on out of the gate. I think there's more volatility, more things to figure out that will make me less confident in them being the stud that we want them to be early on. So with Nick Lodolo, as you mentioned, injuries have always gotten to him. The home park isn't fun. He has shown so many moments of, man, I get it. I get that four-seamer going here, that back foot breaker that is like Chris Sale almost. And then you have the changeup that should be really good. The problem is that it's just not consistent. And I hope that Lodolo does get into that groove and just goes off on a 2-month stretch. could also say that he hasn't had the ability to just have a full season and be healthy and be able to pitch. And that could be hindering him as well. Mm-hmm. I just feel that this is going to be a hipster headache inducing pitcher stifling the entire roster that I don't want to deal with. And that's why I have him at 98. I imagine so many more are going to push him up higher. They say, Nick, if he's hurt, he's hurt. You move on. I get that. It's more about the per game performance of me just not knowing what it's going to be. And I don't think I'm going to get clarity on it, which means he's down to 98.
Yep. Interesting fact. I just saw earlier Ron Chandler posted in 2019, 63% of all IL days were pitchers. In 2024, 74% of all IL days were pitchers. Just seemed fitting to bring up in our conversation of Nick Lodolo, who seems to always be on the IL. We're seeing a lot of pitcher injuries. I don't think Lodolo is going to all of a sudden become a healthier pitcher. We talked a lot about his mechanics and how that can add some strain as well. But yes, I'm always down for taking gambles on Nick Lodolo. I believe in the pitcher. I believe in the talent. One of these years, it's going to click. And so hopefully that's a year where he's on my roster. And maybe it's 2025. Who knows? We're going to get to a pitcher that Nick has been dying to talk about since probably the first episode of the offseason. We're going to do that after this break. Nick, your 99th ranked starter was somebody who jumped up on your radar late in the season and you had good old heart eye emojis for. And it's Chicago White Sox starter Sean Burke. So there may be a lot of people out there who were out of their league contention by like the middle of August and who were only kind of like partially invested in fantasy baseball in September, who may not know who Sean Burke is or have seen, you know, what he was doing at the end of the year. So just, I'm going to give you some free rein here. Just talk about Sean Burke. Obviously he's 99. So I'm being a little bit tongue in cheek in that Nick really loves him, but you were definitely intrigued by what he was showing late in the season.
You know, the thing that brings me the most joy are pitchers who come out of nowhere to actually be relevant. And I think you guys remember my all of a sudden love for Albert Suarez in March, where it felt like the Orioles were running out of pitchers and they just found this guy throwing in a back alley. I was like, hey, you're starting today's spring game. Then all of a sudden he had like a good vert or a not good vert, a high intent four seamer. I didn't have any other data on it. And that was like working and actually hitting those locations. I was like, what is this at 96? You know, I'm like, guys, this is remarkable. And then he had like a bad game. I'm like, fine. But there you go. Albert Suarez was very valuable at times during this past season. And players that just do something new that you just go, wait, hold on. If you didn't have the name here, you'd be like, oh, cool. This is great. It's Sean Burke, who actually, if you remember, putting out a tweet in 2023 in like January saying, hey, guys, who is the sixth starter for the White Sox? And no one knew. Mm-hmm. There was no answer. And eventually, like on March 15th, the White Sox said, it's Sean Burke. We're like, who is this? And then he gets hurt. And then he's not there. And he misses really a lot of 2023. So 2024 comes around and we finally get Sean Burke. And what do I see when he appears in like, I think it was September. On September 15th, he had his first start. It's a four-seamer coming at 95 to 96 and pushing 97, 98. With 17 to 18 inches of vert at 7 feet extension and average VAA. It's like, 0.8, not great, but it's not like 0.4 for that vert.
Right.
And when you tell me he's going 95 plus with 7 feet of extension and that much vert on his four seamer, you got my attention, especially if his locations are 62% high lock. That's 90th percentile. So fine. What else does he have? Sean Burke had a whiffable slider. This thing is a legit whiff pitch, 22% swing strike rate. You watch the guy, you're like, yeah, this is a good swing strike rate pitch, 67% strikes that we saw. There's also a curveball in the mix. Sometimes he has it, sometimes he doesn't. Okay. That is Sean Burke in a nutshell. Powering a four-seamer with two whiff pitches as breakers. What? Oh man, why does he have to play for the White Sox? Now, the benefit of the White Sox is that he's going to get time. I would be really surprised next year if Sean Burke isn't starting out of the gate. He was supposed to be their guy in 2023. They're going to deal with Garrett Crochet. They have Jonathan Canning, and Davis Martin and Drew Thorpe and Sean Burke. That's their rotation, really. Who knows who they get back from the Garrett Crochet thing, but Burke will be involved in it. I'm not saying that Burke is the next Garrett Crochet kind of explosion of a thing. No, he doesn't throw as hard as Garrett Crochet, and that's pretty much makes that happen. The cutter is also so good for Crochet. Still, if you put this on like the Dodgers or the Yankees or the Astros or Atlanta, he'd be easily inside my top 60. Easily. Because this is someone that, yeah, you have that foundational four-seamer and two breaking balls for whiffs. Like, that's it. It's Ronaldo Lopez with a better third offering, I think, you know, like a slightly better fastball. But I haven't seen it stretched out for a full year, and it's the White Sox. Like, this is why he's down here, because I don't feel as if I need to risk my team on Sean Burke early in the season.
Right.
I don't think that he's going to go out there and go six innings with 10 strikeouts in game one or something like that. I'm so intrigued, though. I think he has a four-seamer that can be such an effective pitch. I think there's a slider and a curveball there that are amazing. He does need more polish when it comes to consistency of getting strikes on all three. But yeah, this is fun. This is like, oh, you actually have the talent while other guys are still kind of figuring out all three of those pitches.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say when you were talking about, oh, he's on the White Sox. It's like that enables us to get the opportunity to see guys like Sean Burke.
Right.
And to see how he develops. I'm certainly intrigued by him. I will say, I'm never taking him over your number top one or your top 100 starter.
Yeah.
Twin starting pitcher, David Festa. And you know that because it's me. I'm just, give me strikeouts, baby. Give me a guy where I can look at the arsenal and say, oh man, I'm going to get lots of strikeouts here. David Festa was great in the minors. His first couple starts with the Twins were not great. He got a second chance and really kind of showcased intriguing stuff with that second chance. The Twins then started limiting innings. We couldn't really get like a strong 5-6 inning start from him was a consistent issue, right? Him being able to keep up high performances going deeper into games. It's a possibility. He's a two-time through the rotation type of starting pitcher at the major league level. It's entirely part of the risk profile. But I like the arsenal. I like the strikeout upside. I think he's going to at least have a shot at a rotation spot next year, at least, you know, enter spring training battling for one. And so I like David Festa as a late round gamble, because to a point that you've made many times these last few episodes, if he wins the spot in the rotation, awesome. He's worth having on your bench. If you draft him and he doesn't win the spot out of spring training, you cut him, you move on, you grab somebody else. And those guys where, you know, kind of like immediately are, there's some value in taking flyers on them late.
So that's where my pushback is a little on Festa. And I see in the comments asking Burke over Birdsong. And I say yes, because I have less faith in Birdsong's command. I think that Birdsong is going to be a lot more volatile in being able to locate what he has. Does not have actually, I think, as good of a fastball despite the velocity than Sean Burke. And when you look at Festa, it's actually kind of similar of 94-95 on the four-seamer, which is a little bit less than Burke, but still right there, with 7 feet of an extension and 17 IVB with similar, slightly over the top and not as good attack angle. However, Burke has an amazing intent and location on his four-seamer upstairs. He knows how to do that. And even watching his mechanics, like it's more believable to me that he's able to go north, north-south and straightforward with those pitches. While Festa, watching him, really was anxiety manifested. Sure. I watched a guy that could not put anything where he wanted to. And that went across all of his pitches, four-seamer, slider, changeup. There was constant battling with trying to execute as he wanted to. And I'm not saying that Festa is now prone to do this forever. I do actually think that there are times I watched him, I was like, oh, cool. Yeah, there was the slider. Great. There was the four-seamer and there was the changeup. Like, you can do this. And it could easily be the rookie season. I think I have less faith that a good start from Festa is a good start moving forward. And in him getting the number 5 spot could still very well be a hipster kind of performance moving forward, or hipster kind of player moving forward, then I can very well see Sean Burke getting into that group and staying there longer. I don't know if that's really the truth. I'm just very small sample size of Sean Burke, and Festa, I got to see more of it, and I felt that anxiety internally, every time I watched. Also, you made a great point about the Twins. Twins are strange. They generally go half of their pitchers they trust to go six innings and third time through the lineup. And the young ones, they say, no, we're going to save some for the bottom half of our rotation to say we're going to pull you after that's where the relievers should be used. And I feel like Festa will get limited more than Burke will. This was me putting at 99 and 100 and trying to figure out the two. Burke, obviously, with the White Sox. Festa also, just higher pedigree in general. And yeah. There could be more that's unlocked and stabilized, and there's more confidence, I think, across the league that he will. So I need to take that into account. I likely will not have either one on my teams. I think also we'll get more clarity in March to see how they are performing and just what is working, what isn't, how are the teams utilizing them, that kind of thing. So Festa, I want to like so much. I just find it harder to believe that he will be in that command groove that you'll be really happy in a 12-teamer that you have drafted David Festa.
Yeah, I think my strategy when it comes to like decisions like this with guys like Burke and Festa, and it could be wrong, but I look at Festa has a clearly better minor league track record.
Yeah.
Tons of minor league success to his name. I think that inconsistencies and struggles in the first taste of the major leagues is not a deal breaker, which I know you agree with for any pitcher. And so I'd like to then believe that a guy who has shown he could do it at the high level of the minors can be able to adapt to the major leagues. The things that he was able to get away with in the minors that he wasn't able to get away with in the majors, he can then kind of like learn and grow from that and has a better chance. I'm not saying he will reach the level he reached.
No, I understand.
It has a better chance of reaching that level. And so that's why late in drafts, I will take a gamble on somebody like a David Festa over somebody like a Sean Burke. And again, it's not a locked in, like you have to do it this way. It's the way I do it. And sometimes I get burned on it.
This is, you get burked. This is the one thing I ask everyone to do. Find a way to do this, but watch Sean Burke start Sunday, September 22nd against the Padres all the way through. And you will understand where I'm coming from. That is all I need to say. Watch that game and then we can talk. Yes, that is a sample size of one. One game. However, that is an amazing Padres offense. And the dude struck out the last two batters he faced at 97 miles per hour with 87 pitches on the night. It was awesome. It was just, I mean, the roundup review I wrote of that one, like literally the first two words are capitalized, Sean, period, Burke, period. I ended it in caps. I love this. You know, like it is the most, I said, the man is a dude. I get this way sometimes in my roundup of just like trying to showcase all the, oh my God, that was so much fun to watch. And I didn't really feel that with Festa once this year. And maybe I missed a start that I should have watched more closely and all the way through. I watched Sean Burks all the way through because I was just so curious. And it was fun. It was so, so fun. So that's how I'll leave that one. But I mean, again, have him all the way down here. So many reasons for that to go wrong. That at least showcases why, like that one game showcases everything, I think. It's September 22nd, 2024, Sean Burke at San Diego. Just watch that start however you can, guys. You should do it.
I'm glad we ended with this kind of like back and forth because it's a perfect setup for the next episodes where we look at like guys outside of the top 100 that you and I are intrigued by or want to talk about, because you get into this ratio, or you get into this section, and there's a lot of comments, you know, about guys like DJ Hers and Mason Black and things like that. Where like when you get outside of the top 100, when you get to even outside of like the top 80, really, like, you're going to have your guys. You're going to have your guys that you believe in, your guys that you trust, your guys that you want to gamble on. And it's fun to kind of figure out what everybody's tendencies are, who they like to gamble on. And so Nick and I will try to highlight some of the guys that we are intrigued by outside of the top 100 on one of the subsequent episodes. And I think it should lead to some interesting discussions of like,
oh, man,
you know, potential like things we look for in starting pitchers.
Yeah, there are so many. The fact that like I had to put DJ Hers in tier 15 at like 131 But the thing is, Tony Gonsolin exists. I'm like, well, that was okay. Tristan McKenzie could do really well. Or I had to put Rhett Lauder at 117 and Nesta Cortez at 113, David Peterson at 112. And then there's Jeff Hoffman, who might be a starter, and Hayden Birdsong, and Zimmy Matthews, and Jack Leiter, and Caleb Killian. It's like, there are so many. This is this is kind of my point of just, there's going to be a ton on your wire. This is why you should just take those chances and the ones that you want to make decisions on so fast, because someone is going to be ridiculous and it's going to stick. So if you feel like you should go for someone like DJ Hurst, who I see Uncle Ted here in the comments on YouTube, go ahead. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that podcast. It's going to be coming out later because I'm going to be gone for like 3 weeks, essentially. So looking forward to that. And I can't wait to see you guys again in December. It's going to be great.
Yes. We'll be back for more episodes back then. As Nick says, bon voyage. I am Eric Smolsky, the Pelican.
I'm Nick Pollock, the Lion.
And I'm going to get started on my postcard sending to Nick right now.
Bye-bye.